From WUNC and PRI, this is The Civilist. It's a podcast about how to be your best self without the snark. I'm Stephen Petro. On today's episode, I open up my inbox and answer your questions about whether you have to tip the owner of a service business, how to make up for an RSVP wedding failure.
I never said I was going, never said I was not going to go, never sent a present, never sent a card, nothing. I basically just stopped talking to him.
And whether a gay Southern bachelor can call himself a widower. I say he can. We'll talk about why. Plus, our guest experts take on digital blackface and outing a transgender boyfriend.
If you can't have that conversation with the person that you're seeing and come to a conclusion that makes both of you comfortable, I don't know how you work past that.
So stick around. That's all coming up on The Civilist. Happy New Year, Civilistas. I'm not the type of person who makes New Year's resolutions, but I do like to start off a new year with a clean slate. So today I'm going to be answering a few listener questions that have been sitting here in our mailbag. This first one comes from a Southern gentleman.
Hi, Stephen. For some years I've been living in rural Alabama, which is a state that's still conflicted on matters like gay marriage, with options varying from day to day and with whatever legal jurisdiction you happen to apply in. I've always been annoyed by the marital status question on health forms at doctor's offices. My choices are single, married, divorced, or widowed. I used to check single since legally that's what I was. I didn't want to check married because my partner and I weren't legally wed. But my partner is now deceased, and lately I've been checking widowed, but I've been fretting about that. Is it right to call myself widowed? I've even wondered if it's a betrayal of what my late partner and I had built together to do so. And it's sort of like proposing after death in a weird way. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a really great question. And the good news is that in the state of Alabama now, Judge Ray Moore has been removed from office until the end of his term. So everyone should be able to get married, same sex and opposite sex. That's the good news. Of course, the bad news is many of us in the LGBT community are very worried about what a Trump administration will mean for same-sex marriage. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that he may appoint judges that would overrule the Obergefell ruling from 2015. And that is the court decision that legalized same-sex marriage in all 50 states. Now, to your question, of course you can call yourself a widower. It sounds like you were with your partner for many years, and that is the title or the word that best describes your status now. So I think this is really an important question that doesn't get asked enough, because we often think about medical forms as something that's completely ancillary to any of this, and especially to how we're treated at doctors. You know, it's important for a doctor to know your relationship status. There were times in the past when gay men or gay women were together, but they weren't married, and so there was no option for them to check. And in your case, here you were partnered, and now you're widowed, and your doctor needs to know that information. Why is that? Because someone who is widowed has psychological ramifications and may also have physiological ramifications. So your doctor needs to know that information, and you need to check that. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, again, I think that it's really important that you do that. Next, we hear from a listener who made one of the worst wedding faux pas I've ever heard.
Oh, hey, what's up, Civilist? I got an embarrassing one that I was hoping you might be able to help me with. I am pretty terrified of weddings, not just of my own wedding, if and whenever it comes, but also friends' weddings. So I'm in my early 30s, and I don't know, maybe I've been to maybe 3 or 4 weddings altogether, when most of my friends go to maybe 3 or 4 a year. And so here's my situation. A buddy of mine, a pretty good buddy of mine, invited me to his wedding across the country 2 years ago, and I just never replied to the invitation. I never said I was going, never said I was not going to go, never sent a present, never sent a card, nothing. I basically just stopped talking to him. So, like I said, he was a good friend, and I know that I was really rude, and I just don't know exactly how to make amends. I'd like to have that friendship back. So, go ahead, beat me up. I think I deserve some beating up. But also, please, if you can, help me. Thanks.
So you really are a bad person, and thank you for giving me permission to tell you that. Now I'm going to tell you what you need to do. Go get a pen, go get a piece of paper, and start to write an apology. This needs to be a heartfelt one. In the letter, you want to take responsibility for your behavior, and in your case, it's really for your non-behavior. You simply disappeared. You didn't write, you didn't call. This is beyond rude. It's really disrespectful. So I think you want to own that in what you write and just be very genuine about your emotions and how you feel and how you understand the impact that it probably had on your friendship and that couple. But be sure to say, I am sorry that I ghosted on you. And in the note, say that you're going to call in a week and then do so and keep trying until you reach him or until you feel like it's stalking. I'd also send a meaningful gift. And by meaningful, I mean something that will really matter to this couple. So that's what you can try to do to make amends, and your buddy may or may not jump at the chance to reconcile with you. His spouse may also have different feelings about it. Unfortunately, everything we break can't be fixed, so I say it's never too late to try. Good luck here. This question concerns when to tip or not to tip, or how much to tip the owner of a service business.
This is an interesting dilemma that I faced this week when someone did a personal service for me. And when I went to pay for it, they wanted to know if I'd like to do a tip. And I chose not to, primarily because the person working with me was the head of the business. And usually it's customary not to tip the person who owns the business, just maybe the people that work for them. But I upset this person, and she ended up making a big deal of the fact that I made a choice not to tip, and it left a bad feeling probably for everyone. I've noticed that more and more places I go have tip jars available, or almost every receipt you get asks for a tip. So I just need some help with what's appropriate these days.
So this is a really tough question, and it's certainly one that I've dealt with personally. My hair cutter, her name is Angela. She does a fantastic job, and she owns the salon I go to. So I tip her once a year during the holidays. I give her a nice tip, and I give her a note that expresses my appreciation for what she's done. During the year, I tip the person who washes my hair, make sure that is taken care of. So I don't think you can ever go wrong by tipping. Tipping is kind. Tipping is generous. So when in doubt, I do say tip. But here are a couple of other thoughts that come to mind. There's a difference between someone who owns a business and someone who is self-employed. So Angela, in my case, she owns that business. She's making money off of every other hair cutter in there. But I also have a dog walker, and she is in business for herself. She does everything, and she's a business owner, but she's really self-employed, and that's what's key here. So tipping is really meant to reward excellent service, and I think that anytime we get excellent service, it's a good idea to put down some cash. Now, is there a problem with people trying to blackmail us into tipping for what we would consider just kind of basic service? Yes, and then I would ignore it and, you know, just pay my bill and move on. You know, so I think when it comes to this particular business owner, you probably burnt that bridge. It's time to find a replacement. Sorry, but moving forward, I would ask the service provider directly, do you expect me to tip or not? Then you'll have your answer, and I would if they say yes. Here's a question about a blackface filter, or what's called a lens, on Snapchat. That's the social media platform all the teens in your life live on. The feature in question allows users to darken their faces and add dreadlocks, reminiscent of Rastafarian Bob Marley.
My teenage son practically lives on Snapchat and has started using the new Bob Marley filter along with many of his friends. I am appalled and think this is a form of what I'll call digital blackface, but I'm not sure how to explain why I think this is so bad. Is this ethically wrong? What do we say to him? As you can probably guess, we're a white family.
I have my thoughts on this issue, but I thought Joshua Johnson might be a better person to ask. Joshua created Truth Be Told for KQED in San Francisco. It explored issues of race, culture, and identity. He's also the host of 1A, a new public radio program. Joshua is African-American, and he agreed to weigh in on this for us.
Well, I think that the parent is wise to be thinking about this, is wise to be thinking about not only whether this is good or bad and how to talk to her child about this, but also whether or not this brings up a cultural blind spot, which is really one of the hallmarks of conversations on race that a lot of people struggle with. It's hard to know what you don't know. You know, this kid may not know about what blackface is or why this may be an issue, and the mom certainly doesn't know how to address it. In terms of it being digital blackface, we should be clear, a number of social networks other than Snapchat have similar filters that allow the user to change the tone of their skin or to superimpose their face with the face of a celebrity who may be of a different skin color. So I don't want to pin this specifically on Snapchat. Blackface was a form of entertainment that allowed whites, or at least non-blacks, to assume cultural stereotypes about people of color for the sake of entertaining one another. Snapchat created this filter in honor of 420 Day, this unofficial marijuana holiday, and associated it with Bob Marley as a way of allowing people to show their appreciation for Bob Marley. But here's the thing. They actually did it with the consent of the estate of Bob Marley. Bob Marley's family was in on this. So then the question becomes, if the family is in on it, what makes it blackface? I think that would have to do with context. If this young man was just using a Bob Marley filter because it was 420 day and he's trying to look edgy by having this kind of pot-related picture and he doesn't know any better, I'm not sure I would call it blackface. It's certainly questionable. It's definitely worth discussing, but blackface, not really. If he was doing it as a way to kind of put a little hip-hop or reggae patina on himself and look cooler through association with a culture that's not his own, that's blackface. It's a benign digital form of blackface, but that's kind of what that is. I mean, think about why Al Jolson and the original Amos and Andy wore blackface. They wanted to get into these cultural rhythms that would seem more black to a white audience, that would seem cooler. You know, Al Jolson got in blackface and he sang and he danced and he performed the way that black artists perform. He was trying to embody some of that character. That's blackface. And this young man needs to know that just because nobody is offended, just because no one has screamed and yelled about it, just because no one's called him on it, doesn't make it right. That as a young man, he needs to be mindful of the way he plays with other people's cultures. This isn't even appropriation. This is exploitation. And I think mom needs to find a way to sit him down and say, look, I know you have this filter on Snapchat. I know that this is a message that just went between you and your friends and it disappeared because that's how Snapchat works. But I really need you to be careful about the way you put yourself out to the world. These images are like playing with fire, and I don't want my son, who I love, to get burned. I trust you. I don't necessarily trust other people to view you as the good and decent and caring person that I know you to be. So please don't play with this fire. Okay, just take this filter off your phone and don't look back at it. You're better than this. You don't need this. Please, for your mom's sake, be careful with this.
This last question comes from a lesbian who wants to wave her pride flag, but respect her transgender boyfriend's privacy.
I lived my adult life as a happy and out lesbian, but then a few years ago, I became involved with a transgender man, and I didn't want to out him by telling people that he's trans, because that's his private information to reveal or not, but neither could I bear anybody thinking that I was heterosexual, that I was involved with a cisgender man. I've been too active and committed to the LGBT community to be comfortable with that. Do you have any suggestions about how to handle this, how to be able to share my identity without revealing his? Thanks.
This time I reached out to James Parker Sheffield. He's a trans man living in Atlanta, and he posted a selfie with a beard and a scowl on Twitter shortly after North Carolina passed its controversial House Bill 2. It's also known as the Bathroom Bill, and it limits protections for LGBT folks and especially trans people. I asked James how our lesbian caller can talk about her identity and that of her boyfriend.
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing to keep in mind, first and foremost, is that our identities are our own. So the people around us don't get to tell us who we are. People like to take gay and lesbian specifically and simply attach those labels solely based on who someone is sleeping with in the moment. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you're not in a relationship with someone or you're not having any sort of sexual activity with someone, you don't then suddenly stop being lesbian or stop being gay. So regardless of who you're dating and who you're interacting with, whatever that identity is still your own. And then I also think that it's important to keep in mind that you have to have a willingness to talk about these things. If you are out and open, then the expectation would be that the people around you would accept you for who you are. And so talking openly about the types of relationships you're in and being willing to take questions is just kind of all part of it. Now, what I would worry about in this particular situation that's being outlined is she not willing to tell people that this individual is trans because that individual is not out and open? That would be the hurdle. If she is an out and open lesbian, then being with anyone who's not out and open is going to create a level of difficulty. So I would really encourage her to have the conversation with the person she's seeing, find out the level of comfort in sharing that identity with other people. I don't care what kind of relationship you're in, if you don't have that communication, if you have any sort of hurdle in your relationship, any sort of thing that you see that is going to have impact on your social life or how you interact with people at work or whatever the case may be, if you can't have that conversation with the person that you're seeing and come to a conclusion that makes both of you comfortable, I don't know how you work past that if you can't just have the conversation and find something that makes you feel comfortable. I would actively suggest that conversation sooner than later. If this individual isn't closeted in any way and is very out as a trans man, then the other people within the community should be very accepting of that relationship. T is part of the alphabet soup. So you're not surrendering a sense of queer community by being in a relationship with a trans person. It's really going to come down to whether or not that trans person is okay with his identity being shared. Telling someone that someone else is trans, if that person is open, is in no way revealing some sort of dirty secret. It's only revealing something if that person is closeted.
Many thanks to Joshua Johnson, James Parker Sheffield, and everyone who submitted a question. Well, that's all the time we have. I'll be back next time with even more advice, and you can help drive the conversation. Please send me a voice memo with your tricky social dilemma to thecivilistpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 919-263-0929. The Civilist is a production of WUNC, PRI, and me. My producer is Rebecca Martinez. Mark Blasco wrote our theme song. I'm Stephen Petro. Thank you for listening.